countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And now, the Last Comic Shop podcast players proudly present a scene from the magnificent cinematic treasure, Tombstone.
Sister boy should have stuck around.
What do you want, Ringo?
I want your blood, and I want your soul, and I want them both right now.
I don't want any more trouble.
Well, you got trouble, and it starts with you.
I ain't gonna fight you, Ringo. There ain't no money in it. Sober up.
Come on, boys.
You wretched slugs. Don't any of you got the guts to play for blood?
I'm your Huckleberry. That's just my game.
All right, Lunger. You go to hell. I'll put you out of your misery.
Say when.
And see.
Thank you. I hope you all enjoyed that. Welcome back to the Last Comic Shop podcast. I'm those with the most, Danny Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith, Ethan Larson, and Mikey Wood for this wonderful week. J.A. Scott is unfortunately on vacation this week, but he will be back at the Last Comic Shop for sure soon. And
he's
we
on assignment.
Yeah,
there.
Where at?
I think he's going to the Last Comic Shop in Malaysia. That's what he's
talking. I hope so.
We get their emails.
We got to get him on the show right there. That should be in the New Year's resolution of the Last Comic Shop, that we're getting the Last Comic Shop from Malaysia on this show.
Any case, we hope that you're going to enjoy this week's show of the Last Comic Shop, because as you might have guessed, from the fact that we started off the show with a scene from a Western, we're going to do another Western comic book. It is another genre show. Yes, our favorite French mime. And of course, when we have Ethan on the Last Comic Shop podcast, the genre always ends up being Westerns.
This week, we're opening up the shop up for Huckleberries. What is a huckleberry?
You know, it's like a blue dog that wears a small hat. In any case, yeah, so on this week's program, we're going to be talking about another European Western, because they didn't have the Old West in Europe, but they liked to make comic books about it. And this one is one of the most famous and arguably most successful Western comic books of all time. It's Lucky Luke by Morris. Now, for a little bit of a backstory for why we all of a sudden just decided to do Lucky Luke, a couple of weeks back on a show that Ethan also guest starred on, we were talking about One Piece and how One Piece is one of the highest selling collections of comic books of all time.
Did you guys check out the Netflix show?
I still have not. It's been on for months, and I still have yet to check it out.
Yeah, the show is great. It's really well done. The casting is spot on for everybody except for the main character. I'm still not sold on that guy, but everybody else, super entertaining. Yeah, if you have time, it's on Netflix, the One Piece show, and it's coming back for another season, they announced.
So speaking of, again, One Piece, when we were talking about that particular book, Ethan found a list of the highest grossing comic books of all time. And I thought that it would be interesting to go over that list as the opening salvo for this week's show. So without further ado, Ethan, would you like to start us off with the top 10 all-time best-selling collected editions?
This is mainly dominated by Japanese manga and European comic albums because they are sold in volumes, unlike which you'll see later in this show. We were going into the periodical single issue floppy comics, which is dominated by American comics. As you,
Mark Millar started a big fuss a few weeks back point where he talked about how Marvel and DC are 9% of the comic sales market, which is true, but he's referencing the collected editions.
So I'll go kind of quickly through these. Obviously, number one is One Piece. Sold 516.5 million copies as of today. Number two is Asterix from, was that what, France, Belgium? France.
Yeah, I think it's one of those.
And that's been publishing from 1959 to the present. Number three is Peanuts. I don't think that should surprise anybody. That's the highest American collected volume of comic books that's out there. Fourth is Golgo 13, which we have a show planned to do that.
We do. That was voted the next manga we should cover on the show. So that's definitely coming here in 2024.
And number five is Lucky Luke, going on from 1946 to present and has sold 300 million copies. So Golgo 13 is 300 million, Peanuts is 300 million, Asterix 385. Then the next one up is Doraemon from Japan, that's 300 million. The next one is Dragon and Tiger Heroes, I never heard of that, 1969 to present. Seems like it's a, might be China book. 280 million. Dragon Ball was from 1984 to 1995. And then Andrew's favorite, Adventures of Tintin, went from 1929 to 1976, sold 250 million copies and still selling today. And then Naruto sold 250 million. That's the top 10.
Yeah. And it's like another 10 spots before we get to Garfield.
Right. Yeah. If you look at this list, which again, you can find on Wikipedia, this is where we're getting this information from. But I think they give like maybe 20 entries on that list. And there's only actually three American quote unquote comics on there. It's Peanuts close to the top, and then Garfield's on there, and then Casper the Friendly Ghost towards the bottom of the list. The rest, again, as Ethan mentioned, dominated by manga and Bande Desirées, which is the name of the collected editions in Europe.
I'm very surprised to see isn't on here is Archie. I mean, weren't the Archies sold in like a big bounded book, or is that still considered floppy?
I would still think that Archie's is still considered a floppy, because in essence what we're talking about is the trade paperback, you know, or the graphic novel here in America. That's what people would consider the collected edition here in America. And I'm not aware of any Archie collected editions that sold that much. But speaking of Archie and floppies, it is important to note that the Americans do dominate that particular.
But yes, the most popular periodic single issue floppy comic, and anybody guess at what that character might be?
I'm going to say Batman.
Close.
Up in the sky, look, it's a thing! It's a plane! It's Superman!
Superman.
Full powerful brother, yes.
Really, Superman sells more than Batman does?
Yes, actually by a considerable margin. It's been around, obviously, since 1938 to present. And has sold 600 million, where Batman has only sold 484 million.
Huh.
When did Batman overtake Superman, do you think, as DC's dude? Because Superman held those reins for a long, long time.
I would say not until after the Tim Burton movie, for sure.
When Denny O'Neill took over, this is not apropos to this. Superman, in its purest form, is wonderful, and I love it. But the comic stories really vary greatly. So that's why I'm surprised, because Batman for me is more successful overall as far as storytelling is concerned.
In our lifetimes, I think Batman has overtaken Superman for sure.
For sure. But if you go back, even at the heyday of the 60s when the Batman TV show was on, I still feel like more Americans knew who Superman was from the years of the Superman radio program and the George Reeves. And then once Christopher Reeves burst onto the scene, recatapulted Superman into the limelight as DC's character. I mean, they were going to build a Superman land in what? Ohio.
And even in Batman's heyday, you still had, like, the death of Superman was the biggest thing in comics.
Right.
You know, or John Byrne's reboot. So, like,
I wouldn't even think it was comics. I think it was pop culture. I mean, it made the national news when he died. I told my wife that Batman married Catwoman in the comic books, and her mind was like blown. She had to read everything about it. And so obviously the common person doesn't know, but I bet if I asked her about Death of Superman, she'd be like, yeah, that happened in the 90s and it was dumb.
So you got Superman, Batman. That's one. All right. Two. Then. Yeah.
So this is the first Marvel entry. Do you guys want to take a guess?
That's Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
1963 to present, 387 million. Number four is X-Men with 260 million.
Not surprising, but it is a testament to X-Men just simply because chronologically they've only been popular since the mid 70s. And so for them to like burst on the scene with that much impact, when you've got other folks like Batman and Superman that have decades more exposure, that's a story.
Yeah. And even too, like in recent times, I feel like X-Men, as popular as it is, it's more of a niche thing.
Right.
Than like the Batman that's everywhere. So,
yeah.
Number five is Captain America, selling $210 million, 1941 to present. Diabolique is number six, 1962 to present, $150 million. Is that a European book?
Yes. It's from Italy. It's about a criminal.
Jewel. And it's awesome. Yes.
It is pretty good. The only thing I know about it was they covered a movie on MST3K.
Danger Diabolique.
Danger, any case.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to name eight first, because I'm going to go back to how important and monumental I think number seven really is. So the number eight entry is The Phantom, that's been around since 1936. It sold approximately as many copies as number seven, which has only been around since 1992. Any guess at what this comic is?
Spawn. Is it Spawn?
It is Spawn.
That's disgusting.
How do you really feel, Mikey? How do you really feel?
God, I hate that book. Like, I don't.
Again, like the X-Men thing, that's a testament to how popular that character is. I mean, yeah, we can all kind of choke on our gum that, like, it's in the same sentence as the Phantom, who is the, I think, the first costumed crime fighter.
I mean, it has Batman beat by 3 years. It has Superman beat by 2 years. Right. When did the Shadow? Is the Shadow rip off of the Phantom? And
the Shadow technically isn't a comic book.
He was a pulp character before he was.
I see. So
that's I'm surprised. Yeah, Flash Gordon was not on that list as opposed to the Phantom, because that's
his impact. What are they basing? They're basing this on floppy comic sales.
Yeah. Yes. But the Phantom is very popular overseas. It is, I think, in places like
Brazil.
India?
Brazil. Yeah. It's like
India.
And they did have Billy Zane.
And certain parts of Africa. Man. Like, it is one of the most popular comic books of all time. So.
And I think we touched on this on a different show or in a different life, that the same best-selling single-issue comic is, of all times, X-Men number one. Published in 91, sold 8.2 million copies.
Right.
7.2 million of them are in dollar boxes.
Well, before we go to commercial break, these are all been awesome facts and figures, but there was one fact that I saw on this particular Wikipedia page, which I feel is extremely important.
Oh, yeah. So we mentioned that Superman, which has been around since 1938, has sold 600 million copies. Mentioned that the number one comic collected volume is One Piece, selling 516.5 million. Or where One Piece came from, the best-selling comic magazine is Weekly Shonen Jump, with 7.6 billion...
And wow.
Been published since 1968 to the present.
Jeez. That's like not even in the same solar system as the rest of them. 7.6 billion. And I saw that actually the highest selling American comic magazine on that list was actually Classics Illustrated at 1 billion.
Right. Which only went on for 30 years. So if they would have kept Classics Illustrated going, whatever Classics Illustrated is.
It is Illustrated Classics. So it's like Moby Dick.
Yeah.
And they're really like, there was a revival in the late 90s or like early 90s, 91, 90, and they're so good.
I think the catcher in Major League reads an issue of Classics Illustrated on the bus when he's on a road trip somewhere with his
that girl he's trying to impress.
Exactly. Well,
one thing I did want to bring up, the Shonen Jump, it's been digital for the last decade. And that's something I don't think we have numbers on the digital outreach of comics. Now that things have gone global, you know, what is the impact of Webtoons? What is the impact of the Marvel Unlimiteds and the, you know, the reach of the DC. I don't even know what the DC one's called anymore. I don't have that subscription.
Yeah. But it's a super interesting list. And you're going to hear a little bit more about our thoughts on this list, as well as how it relates to, again, the number five all-time highest selling collected edition with Lucky Luke right after these messages, so stay tuned.
It just means we gotta read some Asterix, we gotta read some Peanuts, and now we gotta do some Spawn, and then get Mikey on the show.
Hi, it's Carlo Calentuan, Last Comic Shop podcast listener and comic book tragic here in the Philippines. Mabuhay! When I'm in the US, I'm always on the lookout for a good deal on boards, bags, boxes, and all other manner of comic book related supplies. And that's why I love to go to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD to get 10% off of all my orders. Not only do I get a discount on everything I buy at BCW, but I'm able to support the podcast when I use LCSPOD at checkout. So if you're in need of comic book supplies, head over to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD. Oh, and guys, I'm still waiting for that Tressy review. Come on, when is it?
When you're done listening to this podcast, check out mine. My name is Dave, and I'm the host of Beer in Front. My podcast is just enjoying the beer that's in front of you. Sometimes we forget about a classic beer while we focus on the new trendy thing. What I try to do each week is to enjoy an old school classic or have a beer that has potential to be a classic. I'll also talk about events of the day. I'll add my spin to things. And each week there are people that really annoy me and I'll call them out as the jagoff of the week. That's Beer in Front, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. Welcome back, cowpokes, as we sit down with our collected edition of Lucky Luke. And we got our pal Mikey Wood here to tell us a little bit about a man named Morris.
Morris, the creator of Lucky Luke, whose name was actually Maurice de Bevere, he was born in Belgium in 1923. He wanted to be an artist his whole life. His dad actually ran a factory that made pipes, smoking pipes. And he was supposed to basically take on the business after that and decided that he did not want to do that. He was at a private school, a Jesuit run private school, used to get in trouble for you know, drawing little doodles of the teachers and things of the such. Got a job working in an animation studio, and then World War II hit, and thus the bombs hit, and he was relocated a few times. Finally got a job working at a newspaper with two other artists, one of which was Peyo, who would go on to create the Schrumpfs, who we know better as the Smurfs.
Snorks! Oh.
Yes, Smurf. You know, above water snorks.
Okay, yeah, same thing. Same depth. Yeah. Okay.
So another one of those wonderful Belgian artists, and he drew Lucky Luke from 1940 something or other until his death in 2001, actually, at the age of, he was 77 years old. Wow. So it was a long haul for him, and he was a dapper guy too, always dressed up, always wore bow ties. The collection we read has really, really good introduction, and I actually found it a little more interesting than the comic itself. The comic is a very simple
story. I could relate to the part where they were talking about when he was in school, how he didn't doodle pictures in the margins of his notebook. He had the doodles front and center, and the notes were up in the margins. But hey there, little cowpokes, we've got Andy Larson here to tell a tale about Lucky Luke, the complete collection, volume one from Cinebook. But what was this all about there, Mr. Larson?
Well, the 10-cent synopsis, simply put, is I'm a lonesome cowboy, lonesome as can be.
You're a loathsome cowboy?
Lonesome. So, Lucky Luke is a lonesome cowboy. He is the archetypal cowboy type character. And unlike other comic book cowboys from the European theater, such as Mobius's Blueberry, Lucky Luke is really more fun, kind of all ages, cartoony type of cowboy. And this collection tells various stories when Morris was first drawing the character as Lucky Luke and his horse, Jolly Jumper, made their way across the prairies, righting the wrongs and solving people's problems and just genuinely being a good egg. That type of upstanding cowboy that we've idolized in our dreams that will get the job done and stand up for justice and so forth.
Well, Andy, just to make this a little bit more relevant to anybody that, you know, was born in the last couple decades here and isn't European, is more American, isn't this basically the story of Woody and Bullseye?
Oh. It is. It is. So for anybody that is either a fan of Toy Story or has kids that are a fan of Toy Story, I would highly recommend picking up some Lucky Luke for your kids, because basically that's where the inspiration for Woody came from, is from Lucky Luke. And in fact, if you're reading this particular collection, he's a tall, lanky, square-jawed cowboy that stands straight up and rides a wonderful horse that talks.
Nope. I'm going to call baloney on this one.
What?
At one point, only one character yells, "Reach for the sky." And it's not Lucky Luke.
Yeah,
it took me halfway through the book to make the connection, but like Ethan, I was looking for snakes in boots.
Yes.
Didn't see it. Couldn't find it.
But again, Lucky Luke, he's a dead shot with a pistol, stands up for the little guy, comes into town, rights the wrongs, and simply put, He is lonesome, though. Like, if you're looking for any sort of romance in this first collection, there is none. I think the closest you get is he's at a rodeo at one point, and some young schoolmarm or something in the stands gives him an eye or blows him a kiss or something. But long story short, it's not really a lot of romance. It's a lot of action. And I know that Mikey said his favorite part was the introduction, just learning about Morris. I found this utterly charming. And I will say that one thing that I can comment on with Lucky Luke is very similar to some other comic books that we've read on this particular show, whether it was Crisis of Infinite Earths or the Flash Gordon comic strip, which is simply put that Lucky Luke was never meant to be read in a complete collection. At least all in one sitting, for sure. These are all like classic Western melodramas. There's a bad guy, there's a good guy. Bad guys wear black hats, good guys wear white hats. Good guys win in the end. And so that can get repetitive after a while. But if you were a kid, 8, 9 years old, getting this particular magazine back in the day, and you were picking up one, and maybe it would have been another 6 months before you would get another issue, these stories would be spread far enough apart from each other, it wouldn't bother you. So I do feel like you need to put yourself in that mindset, because I won't lie, it did get repetitive at times.
I was going to say, Chad, wasn't that your biggest criticism on this book?
Yeah, whenever I read it, I stopped by, I got to see Andy midway through the week, because he picked up an awesome Captain America shield for me. But in the process, I was like, sir, are we reading all of Lucky Luke? And he's like, yeah, we're reading the whole thing. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, okay. I didn't read the whole thing.
Yeah. I got about the gist of Lucky Luke. Andrew said one of his favorite issues was what, Desperado City? And that was a quintessential Lucky Luke story. So I had to read up until that point. And then once I did, I was like, all right, we'll put Lucky Luke to bed at this point.
I enjoyed it, and like Andy was talking about, it is what it is in the most charming way. These are comic strips aimed at kids, and the fun part is Lucky Luke isn't just lucky. Like, he's a competent dude who's traveling from town to town, and a lot of times you would think, like, Lucky Luke, you're thinking, like, the Dudley Do-Right character that, you know, is backing into victories and that sort of thing, and sure, like, Luke gets lucky from time to time, but like, he's showing up, he's standing tall against Cigarette Caesar and you know, Name Your Bad Guy, you know, he's taking care of things at the rodeo, and you know, he is a competent cowboy in all ways, shapes, and means. He shows up from town to town and, you know, finds the big bully and takes him on, and you get that comeuppance. And you know, if you're a little kid, those are the stories you want, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And to read it in one big collection like this, it was like, okay, all right, I got it. Yeah, there's more of that. Okay, cool. But the interactions between him and his horse, like, you know, Jolly Jumper was a great character, whatever he'd be in the different towns, like, there are all sorts of little sight gags, and it's simple in a classic way.
Yeah.
You know, I want to backhand compliment this all the way, but I don't want Lucky Luke to show up and put me down for being a bully. You know,
yeah, it's silly and very slapstick. I mean, I was familiar with Lucky Luke. Like, I knew Lucky Luke. And I had seen, I want to say there was an American cartoon. I think it might have even been Disney. Was it Disney or Hanna-Barbera? Somebody did American cartoons of Lucky Luke, and I remember seeing that. And I saw, you know, a movie with Terrence Hill in it. That was a Lucky Luke movie. It was dubbed, you know, and Terrence Hill was in Super Fuzz. You ever see Super Fuzz? Anyway.
Yes.
Italian, yeah. So he did a Lucky Luke movie in the 90s, and I'd seen that. And it's just like Asterisk. Like, there's a couple of Asterisk movies that are silly, and I've watched them, and they're goofy. But what's charming about it is that these European guys who do Western, it's just like spaghetti Western films, or, you know, they're called spaghetti Westerns because they were all filmed in Italian, in Italy by Italian directors and things like that. They write these love stories to the old American West. And it's interesting how much nostalgia these guys have for a history that isn't theirs, you know?
Right. Right. It's very similar to the way that, you know, we talk about, you know, knights and dragons and things like that. And
right.
The King Arthur tales, those aren't really part of our heritage, but like we romanticize that particular. It's the foreign, but also familiar. I think that's where a lot of this comes from. With Europe, is those wide open spaces. Everybody's so crammed in Europe. There's so many people in so many countries there. But Ethan, you're the big Western guy. And sometimes you've commented on previous shows how, like, some of these Westerns that we do, they don't fit your idea of what a Western is, right? Did this one fit that criteria?
Oh, absolutely. You could turn your brain completely off to read all of these. But as everybody has said, it's basically like watching 6 hours worth of whatever your kid's cartoon show of choice is. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually you get to the point where it's like, you know, I don't care how many times, you know, the Spidey and his amazing friends are saving the day. Same story over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think it got to that point. My favorite story was actually the one, it was fairly dark, where he had a doppelganger. Mad Jim. I thought that was great because it like ended with like a quick draw session, and like Lucky Luke just like blasted the dude, and I was like, okay, I respect you, Lucky Luke. I mean, he fell into like the manga heroes tropes that you run into, where they're the best ever at everything. You know, all the rodeo stuff, even when the guy's cheating, he still like is great at everything. He's great. Right.
That's the bone I was going to pick with you. When we read Lone Ranger, you're like, oh, Lone Ranger's bad, man. Ah, phooey. What about Lucky Luke? He's Superman. He knows everything. He knows all the cultures. He sees the smoke signals going up. He's like, wait a minute, those smoke signals don't make any sense. And he goes to investigate. And sure enough, that's the big bad guy faking the smoke signals. But like, Lucky Luke's the best at everything.
I would either stereotypical or quintessential wandering cowboy. I just wish that, you know, and I don't know if anybody else has mentioned this, other than, you know, his horse, he doesn't anybody have to play off of. He plays off of all these doofus sheriffs that he goes to every town that he's in. Yeah. And but there's only so many doofus sheriffs that I can put up with that are like, okay, nobody's competent in this world except for Lucky Luke. He's the only one that actually knows what the hell he's doing.
I did like the gambling sheriff who has to leave the saloon in a barrel, and he's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Sneaking in the window of the police house because he lost the key.
I'm going to disagree with that just slightly, because honestly, my favorite parts of the books were not only like were Lucky Luke's interaction with the bad guy of the week. Like, some of those bad guys were kind of fun. There's the rodeo issue where there's like this big burly guy that's like almost like the Bluto type character. And again, very similar to other comic strips of the time. Morris was really influenced a lot by E.C. Seeger's Popeye. You know who Popeye is? Lucky Luke is just the cowboy version of Popeye. Yeah, he's a cowboy, not a sailor.
There's so many other characters in Popeye for him to interact with. There's Olive Oil, there's Wimpy, there's, I think, a baby, I don't know.
Sweepy.
Oil for him to play off of. It's not just randos that just show up who are like an archetype of the same character over and over again. Well, like, I wish there was like a reoccurring sheriff that also goes from town to town and also is like, that's not good. And hey, what are you doing? Like a U.S. Marshal. A U.S. Marshal would travel from town to town. He could have fit that in. Right. I'm just saying, like, just give me somebody else.
I know when he first started doing Lucky Luke at Spiro magazine in Belgium, that the editor at the time told him that the character had to be incorruptible. It had to be, because it was for kids, it had to be, you know, the quintessential, like you said, quintessential hero, absolutely incorruptible, absolutely good, absolutely wins all the time. So that's probably part of that. And, you know, it was very slapstick and very, but part of me wants to read further. I mean, the book went on for 30 something years.
It's still going on now.
It's still going on. Yeah. I wonder if it ever becomes something akin to Usagi Yojimbo, which looks very cartoony, but actually isn't. If you've ever read Usagi Yojimbo, you know, it's got slapstick moments to it, but it's actually rather, you know, serious. No, I don't know about, it's not dark or anything, but you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It's epic.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it's an epic. So I wonder if that ever happens with Lucky Luke, if it ever, because this is, you know, this first collection is very early. You know, it was post-World War II. It was very early on. So I wonder if there's evolution. So I know there's evolution visually. I know he starts smoking a cigarette at some point, and I know he stops smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
And in the back matter, they mentioned that he does bring on somebody else to be his writer at some point. And
then right,
he continues to write the strip.
But so at the same time, I can recall, you know, when I was reading this book, and Ethan and I talked about this real quickly, was it reminded me a lot of when we read Pulp. And the guy that's writing the classic Western stories, he's like, I'm going to write the Western story where the good guy finally, I don't know, rides off into the sunset, or, and his editor's like, no, we don't want that. We just want the next story about him going out and fighting the next crooks in the next town. And so, like, part of that is like that Western charm. It was, you know, I think that Ed Brubaker hit the nail on the head when, like, we don't want stories to change very much. We do kind of want the same story over and all over again, just kind of slightly recycled. I mean, it's been working for other comic books for decades.
But at the same time, one of the most like influential and, you know, best Westerns out there is Unforgiven, where they basically con the guy that went into retirement to go out of retirement to fight the big bad at the end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something you could always play off of. I don't know if Lucky Luke retires and then he comes back or whatever. You could have that redemption story of Lucky Luke. But yeah, it's basically like, you know, Kung Fu. He's traveling the earth and beating up bad guys. Like, it's,
I was just going to say, I really enjoyed some of the gags in here. I enjoyed some of the setups, and like the one time where he puts the steel plate in his back, he knows the bad guy would shoot him in the back.
Yes.
So, you know, it ricochets off. Like, it's just, he's prepared for everything, man. He's James Bond. And
he's lucky.
He makes his own luck.
I just wish like he wouldn't have offed most of these characters, because like Andy was saying, sometimes the bad guys were much more interesting, and I wish that they would have had like story arcs with the bad. I wish Mad Jim would have came back. Maybe he didn't get shot. Maybe, because I like the idea that they played off of the doppelganger, because that's a classic like cartoon trope. You think of like Negaduck. You think of Bizarro.
Yeah, Venom.
Yeah. The opposite but equal, but he also looks like the guy, you know, it's just perfect. And maybe he shows up again. I don't know. He's a good character. He should show up again.
It's a long run. Yeah. I'd be, if it's anything like American comics, I bet he does.
Well, one thing that's like American comics is cliffhangers. Dun, dun, dun. And it's called a commercial break. And we'll be right back with more of our talk about Lucky Luke, our ratings and recommendations right after these commercial breaks. Stay tuned.
What happens when 20-something Madison is zapped into old-time radio shows? No technology.
Why want to go to voicemail?
No Starbucks.
Don't call yourself a coffee shop if you only sell drip coffee.
And no one is PC.
I don't need no lip from.
Were you about to say woman? Because I'm wearing a gun and I have no idea how to use it.
Madison on the Air serves to highlight the way we were and the way we are today, with original radio drama scripts adapted to include the modern-day Madison as she joins famous characters from radio's past, including Sergeant Joe Friday.
Just the facts, ma'am.
I've never actually said that.
Marshal Matt Dillon.
We're not having a shootout with a 10-year-old kid.
I'm too woke to be a part of this.
Superman.
I didn't realize how cold it would be flying like this.
I have to get into the higher atmosphere.
And many more. Visit us on the web at madisonontheair.com or find us pretty much any place podcasts can be found.
You talk so old-timey. I have no idea what you said, but it's adorbs.
Cartoon Dumpster Dive.
I'm your host, Joel.
And I'm your host, Andrew. Join us as we travel back in time to watch the garbage cartoons from your past Will you remember them? Maybe.
We painstakingly watch every episode of these cartoons to remind you that, hey, some things belong in the past.
Our pain is your entertainment. Thanks for tuning in.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, Buckaroos, and it is now time for our ratings, where we're gonna lasso up something fierce.
All right, Lunger, you go to hell.
I am a huckleberry. No, that's not it.
That's just my game.
Get all those doggies out on the tray. Nathan, why don't you give us one of those rating scales? Like
Jay is trapped in a mine somewhere.
There's a snake in my boots.
And what is appropriate for this book should have been nooses, because everybody gets hanged in this book.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the hanging, but no, because it's Lucky Luke, and actually it plays into one of the stories, we're going four-leaf clover. So how many leaves of clover do you give this book?
Oh, very nice.
Nice.
Well, I'll go ahead and go first. As I commented before, I found this utterly charming. And I'm really glad that we're reading these kind of books on the podcast, because I really feel like some folks can just look at books like Lucky Luke or any of the comic strips that maybe I've like recommended in the past, whether that's like Captain Easy, Popeye, or my recommendation for later on this show, Alley-Oop. And they can just say like, yeah, that's just for kids. Like, that's not real comics. And I disagree. I really feel like you really do need to read these things to get a sense of not only comic books' vast and varied history, but like One Piece, there is a reason why this is like in the top 10 all-time best-selling collected editions out there. And it's because it's universally accessible. Anybody can read this from 6 to 60. You can find joy in reading Lucky Luke, despite even the repetitive nature of the storylines. I would recommend picking it up and maybe like just reading one story and then putting it down and coming back a couple weeks later and reading another story. I think that's a good way to read these kind of stories. And it also, to Mikey's point, it makes me curious about where the series goes from here, because this is a series in its infancy. He drew this 2001.
And a little bit further, which was crazy.
Yeah, it's still going on. After Morris passed away, it's still going on. It's been going on for almost a century. And so I want to see like how it evolves. This is one of the classic characters of comic books. You should read it just like you read Superman or Batman or Spider-Man or any of the capes. Read Lucky Luke. It's good. It's a solid 3.5, four leaf clovers. Chad.
So I agree with most of the things you said there. I think this is not a book I would have picked up. It's not a book I've ever picked up before leading up to this point, after how many years of reading comic books. And it is nice to be exposed to these worldwide characters, to be able to hold my own and at least be familiar with a little bit of Lucky Luke, considering it is one of the top comic books out there. With that said, I got real bored. So there's that. But no, this is something, it's aimed at kids. I might not be the target audience for it, but that doesn't mean it's not good. And especially considering these strips were from the 50s that we were reading in this book. They hold up. They're still timeless. You know, there's not anything about them that seemed overly dated. And because Lucky Luke, he respects other cultures, and like, it still fits in today. It's, you don't see a lot of things like, oh, that wouldn't fly. And so, you know, as a parent, you wouldn't have to worry about giving this to one of your kids to read, because they're going to be saying stuff at school they shouldn't say and that sort of thing. I think this fits, and it goes back to that universal appeal that Andy was talking about earlier. But with that said, at the end of the day, I'm going to say 3 four-leaf clovers. I enjoyed it enough. If I happen to stumble upon it in my travels from town to town, you know, I wouldn't say no to reading some more, but not a thing I'm going to seek out.
All right, Mikey, you're up next.
This book was crap. No. The book is like super charming and super, and it is very, very friendly, kid friendly and family friendly. Is it groundbreaking or anything like that? I don't know. It is awfully famous. You know, maybe it was the first of its kind, but anyway, I am curious about more. I don't know if I'm going to actively search it out, but I am curious, you know. So I'm going to say probably about a 3-2. Like, it was, if you really want something fun and something that your kids could probably take a gander at that you're reading, you know, and I usually read things like Torpedo and stuff that, you know, my kid can't read.
Yeah, that's not kid friendly. That's not.
No, it's the opposite of that. But yeah, it's a beautiful little thing. All of those little Belgium comics are the Smurfs and Asterisk and this and Tintin and all of that stuff. They all have that sort of Belgian kind of charm to it. And embraced, like, they love their comics over there too. There's entire museums devoted to like Tintin and things. So anyway,
hey, I'm just going to reiterate a lot of what people said, because I think that they made very good points. The caveat that I will give to all of this is you have to like Westerns. I don't think it transcends the genre at all. Honestly, like, I don't think if you gave this to a kid that didn't care about Woody as a character, never watched Toy Story, never got into Westerns at all, and you gave this to him, I don't think that they would enjoy it. But if you do like Westerns and you have a kid that, like, you know, hey, I saw Woody, he's pretty cool, you know, hey, here's Lucky Luke. I mean, he predates Woody and you'll probably enjoy this. So I do have to do that caveat. I don't think it moves the genre forward at all. You know, but again, this is 1946 or something. You don't want something that's going to move the genre forward at that point. You
got to establish the genre.
Yeah. And again, like, I don't know if I'd go back to reading this. I'm glad that Andy, you know, suggested it, and I'm glad that we've read it for this show. It's just not something that I would, you know, I personally prefer Blueberry over this, because Blueberry was not the greatest at everything. He was almost the everyman, the Bruce Willis, like, what situation am I in now, and has to get out of it. Lucky Luke is very much the opposite. He's very much, you know, the uber powerful cowboy that can do everything and never gets hurt, and, you know, fights off 10 bad guys in a shootout in town, and has plot armor, as Andy referred to it as in his description of me. So I don't know if I'm going to be the most critical on this. I thought about it, but I think I'm going to bring it up to 3, because I think that's where it lies. It's a classic character. You should probably read it at some point if you're very interested in comic books, especially if you're very interested in European comic books. But you know what I mean? I don't want to be, you know, insensitive to, like, one of the most popular characters in all of Europe. Like, I don't want to be that guy, because I just don't know his cultural impact in that region of the world. I think it's fair to say he's a 3.
All right. Well, other things that we hope are 3s or maybe even more for those listeners lucky enough to check them out at your local comic book shop are our recommendations. Yes, this is the time of every single show where we give you other comic books in addition to Lucky Luke, the Complete Collection, Volume 1, that you can pick up at your local comic book shop today. Because
I was going to say, you might have to have your local comic shop order this one.
Well, no, I think that you could probably find some cool comic book shop that would have some Lucky Lukes laying around. And while you're there at said cool comic book shop, make sure that you're looking out for a man in the funny pages. We all know.
What the hell are you guys talking about? Is this a cartoon I missed?
No, Alley-Oop is a comic strip.
Yeah, but like, you have a song and everything.
Where's yeah, that that's coming? The Hollywood Argyles. They cut a song in the 1960s. Look at that caveman go. It's a great song, and it's an even better comic book. And again, while I was reading Lucky Luke, it made me think about, again, some of those comic strip heroes that I have been reading over the past 10 years. As I embrace comic books' roots in comic strips. And one of the most famous of those heroes is Alley-Oop, created by B.T. Hamlin way back in the 1930s. Alley-Oop was a caveman superhero, very similar to Popeye and eventually Superman. He could do no wrong. He punched palookas. He rode dinosaurs. He was an everyman that could get the job done. You can find it at a lot of comic book shops, and maybe they're like older book section, you know, that they're trying to get rid of, or if you go to Half Price Books or things like that. And again, like, similar to Lucky Luke, it's got a charm, a naivete, and I feel like nowadays we kind of sort of need that in our modern day society. That's why I've been reading some of these older comic strips. So, like, if you're loving Lucky Luke, but you prefer cavemen over cowboys, make sure that you're checking out Alley-Oop, because he was something cool before they even got into the time travel. He eventually time travels. That's how awesome he is.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to that recommendation again, because you lost me at Palooka. That is a word we need to use way more often.
Well, what's your recommendation, Chad? You're my palooka.
Oh, Lucky Luke is this long-running European comic, you know, that's existed since the 1940s. I'm going to go the exact opposite direction. And this is a book that, Andy, you had brought up earlier in the year. And we even had talked about another book by some of these creators. But I'm looking at The Great British Bump Off. By John Allison, Max Sarin, Sammy Boris, and Jim Campbell. John Allison and Max Sarin are from Giant Days, which we had just covered on the show recently. And basically, this is a takeoff of those British baking shows. My wife is a huge fan of the British baking shows, where they all gather under the tent and spend 12 weeks or so baking. And, you know, somebody's eliminated each week and everybody's real kind and funny and a little bit naughty. And, you know, it's tons of fun, those shows, and I secretly really enjoy them when the wife makes me watch them, but I pretend like it's a chore. But, like, I've learned what cardamom is. I couldn't tell you what it tastes like, but I know it's a thing. Yeah. But anywho, so The Great British Bump Off came out of Dark Horse, and it's a four-issue miniseries of one of those British baking shows where somebody gets food poisoning, and then the plucky weird girl on the show has to suss out who was the perpetrator. And so they go through and you have all the different stereotypes. You have the grandma character, like all the sweet granny. And you have the nerdy guy. And then you have the guy that's way too confident. And like all of the stereotypes you've come to know and love from those British baking shows show up. And the reason why I say it's the equal but opposite to Lucky Luke is that it only lasts four issues. That's actually my biggest complaint. Like, I would want an entire season's worth of mischief and malfeasance and British bumping off in the bake-off tent. But, yeah, if you're a fan of those shows, there's a charm to this, similar to Lucky Luke. You know, it captures that essence. And, yeah, it was just tons of fun. So a real nice, quick miniseries, The Great British Bump Off. Maybe you can share it with your significant others that loves those baking shows, too. But that's my recommendation for this week.
All right. Well, Ethan, what's your recommendation this week?
Just imagine this. You're craving House of the Dragon. It hasn't been on yet. It's been the writer's strike. It's been delayed, what have you. You're waiting for it to come on. Well, have you ever considered the classic characters Huey, Dewey, and Louie being your dragon riders, being Targaryens? Well, I've got the book for you. It's Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge, World of the Dragon Lords. And this actually comes from my daughter because she's been reading this book and I've been reading it to her at night at bedtime. And it has fantastic art from Giorgio Cavanzano, which also has, I showed it to the boys here. Human characters look identical to Lucky Luke. So if you're looking for something fun and a charming read, it's, you know, Donald, Scrooge McDuck, Huey, Dewey, and Louie go off to an interdimensional planet and become trapped in this medieval fantasy world. And again, Huey, Dewey, and Louie become dragon riders. It's worth it for that hook. So pick it up. We got this at our local library, but I'm sure that you can find it at your local comic book store as well.
Is there a Khaleesi, a quackable Khaleesi?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Nice. All right. Well, Mikey, why don't you ride us off into the sunset for our recommendations this week?
Well, I am recommending Star Wars because
I've heard of that.
Yeah. I'm actually recommending these wonderful Star Wars adaptations that are published by IDW, and they're adaptations of the movies. I'm holding the sequel trilogy, and they're the all ages version of the movie adaptations, and they are translated by Alessandro Ferrari and with artwork by somebody named Igor Chamiso. They're wonderfully cartoony and they're very well done. I quite enjoy them. They've done all three trilogies and Solo and, you know, The Mandalorian. There's actually a Mandalorian one that I just found out existed, things like that. And they're awfully good. you can find them pretty cheap because, you know, they don't have the Marvel logo on them. A lot of people don't know they existed, and they're all ages, but they were also produced for like the European market, but they made them here. And I actually prefer them to the Marvel ones just because of the artwork style. It's really cool.
Very cool.
There you go.
Now, some of the floppies had those beautiful Francesco Francavilla covers.
Yes.
Did they include those in there?
No.
Oh.
But he's wonderful, too.
Yeah. Well, it's a lost art form, those movie adaptations, honestly. I can remember those were some of the first comic books I ever read were movie adaptations.
Yeah.
Tarzan and Return of the Jedi back in the day. Matt had Al Williamson art, I believe, which
was super cool.
So kudos to you for bringing up a movie adaptation that has interesting artwork, because that's a great way of getting folks into the comic book tent. Yeah. And another way of getting folks into the comic book tent is making sure that they rate, review, and subscribe to the Last Comic Shop podcast, because we are in our fourth season, folks. Fourth season. That's right. We have over 150 episodes of The Last Comic Shop evergreen available out on our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. And you can check them out anytime you want. You can learn about all kinds of wonderful stuff, whether it's past comic books that were about Western characters, or past episodes about Star Wars, or past episodes about people baking things. We have any of those? I'm not sure.
We did with the bump off. We covered
yeah,
that.
I guess, yeah, this week. Or even past episodes featuring the characters from DuckTales. Ooh. Maybe. I mean, I think I talked about Darkwing Duck at one point. I don't know. But long story short, we've got an episode for everybody. And if you listen to us long enough, we're hoping that you can not only continue to be in the last to that comic book tent with us, but pull other people in as well.
And you can do that by cluing them into our media. We can be found at Last Comic Shop. On most of your social media platforms, your X's, your Instas, your Facey Spaces, whatever, our Blue Skies, Sky Blue Sky. I think we got kicked off of Mastodon because I kicked off and we were soft banned for a little bit because I screwed up the account. That's on me, gang. But anyway, we're out there on the socials where you can find things like Golden Age covers to help put you into bed at night. You can find weekly polls on the X so that we can get your opinions on things. You can interact with us. Let us know what you think, books you'd want us to read. You know, we talk about the comic books we're reading currently in addition to the stuff from the show. So check us out there. And you can always go back to the home base, which is our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where they could find what this week, Ethan?
Cowboy hats.
Oh!
Why not?
See, you're an old pro, cowpoke. That's right. Our website has all kinds of merch. You can check that out there, as well as links to all the other stuff. And while we might be the Last Comic Shop podcast, we don't want to be the Last Comic Shop, so we encourage everybody to get out there to a comic shop near you. The comic shop locator is www.comicshoplocator.com, where you can find things like the Lucky Luke Collection Volume 1 that we talked about today. Or maybe you want to look for those Star Wars IDW prequel novels with that really cool animated style. Or maybe you're going to go for the classic Alley-Oop. Or you want to head down to Duckburg and beyond with Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge, World of the Dragon Lords. All that and more awaits you potentially at your local comic shop, so check them out.
And smash that 5-star review. We need the positive vibes from this. This is our fourth season, folks. This is going to be bigger. This is going to be the best year ever. The biggest, the best. You want to subscribe today and not miss out on any of this great content that we have coming up. Dark Knight Returns?
Maybe.
I was just say, last year was the year of Chad. That's going to be hard to top. And I still have leftovers. leftovers.
If you know anything about television, fourth season is where things get wacky.
Right.
We've done all the world building. We know
who the characters are.
Yep.
You're clearly not marketers. This is our best year ever. We need to subscribe now. Get on the train. What are you missing out on? Great. Subscribe. Download as many episodes as possible, because Andy said they're all evergreen. And if you need bags, boxes, collectible stuff, go to visit vcwsupplies.com. Use our promo code LCSPOD at checkout to save 10% off of your order. Again, that's vcwsupplies.com. and use our promo code LCSPOD, you'll be supporting the show. You'll also be getting a great discount on stuff that you're going to be buying anyways for all of your collectibles.
Yeah. And we hope that you, again, come back next week. Until then, I was the host with the most, Danny Larson. I was joined by Chad Smith, Mikey Wood, and the wonderful Ethan Larson. And hopefully Jay Scott will be back next week. Until then, stay safe. Stay hydrated. It's hot in the desert. And remember, winter should be your favorite season because it is surely cooler than the rest.
Not with global warming.
When does a regular joke become a dad joke? When it becomes apparent.
Ah! Well played. Well played on that one.
I'm a lonesome cowboy.
Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.